You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Well, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Hour number two coming up. We'll have Nate Ulrich at 2:30 to recap day two of the owners' meetings from Florida, and he met with the Haslams, who spoke with reporters just recently. So we'll have that for you later on in this hour. But now we're going to hear from Sashi Brown, who talked with ESPN Cleveland's Tony Grossi, and on the sound from the Hey Tony Show with Tony Grossi, here's what Sashi had to say when asked what's the plan with the number two pick.
We're going to try to fit the player who puts us in position to win best. At two, we sit with a lot of options available to us. Some are at quarterback, some are at other positions. And, we're too early in the process to determine what we would do. And as you know, Tony, I wouldn't tell you even if I did know.
Good answer there from Sashi Brown. If I did know, I still wouldn't tell you.
Why would he?
And of course not. Of course he wouldn't.
Would Tennessee? I mean, we know they want a king's ransom. Have they specified what that is? No.
No.
Which means that they're not necessarily sold on any one prospect at number one.
Right. And they also, I think, are aware of where they are as an organization and the fact that they need to do whatever it is that they can do to, you know, get as many assets as possible. They have their quarterback. When you have the quarterback, trading down becomes much more of a luxury. If they felt there was a can't-miss guy, I'm pretty sure they'd be all over him, but now they don't have to worry about that, and they can go ahead and do it at the pace they want, and they're a team that could trade down. That's the one thing. If all this smoke out there and everything that we're hearing, it does sound like there could be some smoke around the quarterback position. If there is a guy that these teams truly do think is the best, the fact that Tennessee already does have their franchise quarterback is the one thing that could lead a team to be able to get ahead of the Cleveland Browns and have actually the first pick at a quarterback in this draft.
Yes, correct. And all that being said, and I'm asking this, I guess, specifically to you, Nathan, do you think that the makeup of who moves ahead of the Cleveland Browns would determine what player they may be interested in drafting number one overall?
Certainly. I mean, I think, and what do you mean by the makeup of that team?
I mean, again, so many people are linked, even though Jared Goff is ranked higher in their player rankings, they're linking him to the Cleveland Browns because of the hand size and the AFC North and the size in the division and his ability to play in the cold and the wet football is not going to be an issue, so on and so forth. And also their ability, whether if we do bring in RG3 or have Josh McCown, that he can sit for a little while and you have the luxury to go through a rebuild, whereas a team that moves up maybe in a West Coast offense or San Francisco with Chip Kelly moves up to go get, he's going to move up to probably go get Jared Goff. It's not going to be
San
move
Francisco,
up to go get.
That's
what
the
I
one
mean.
Team,
that's
if
what
it's
I mean.
San Francisco, that's the one team that I would definitely think is coming up to get
that's
Goff.
More so than anything, that's what I mean. If it's Dallas, do they have a guy? If it's San Francisco, do they have a specific guy? If it's the LA Rams, do they have a specific guy if they move up to one? That's what I meant.
Yeah, I think that if it's the 49ers, then there's no question it's Goff. Beyond that, I don't know if it could be a little bit more wide open. But I think if it's the 49ers, I don't think there's really any question that it would be to come up and get Jared Goff.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but would you still confidently, if the 49ers moved up to number one and took Jared Goff, would you still so confidently say it's a lock to go Carson Wentz at two?
I think it much more depends on what happened, right? I think it depends on, is RG3 here? Is that something that we ended up doing?
Okay.
What is our evaluation of Carson Wentz? I think that will have a lot to do with it. So no, it would not be a 100% no-doubter.
Well, all right. That's why I asked.
Yeah. If their evaluations of the two are similar, then yes, then it does become a 100% no-doubter. But
sure.
I don't know if the evaluations of the two are the same.
And do you think that how much is weighing on Carson Wentz's pro day simply because it is going to be inside in a controlled environment, ideal for him with, more rest than anybody else since he's thrown at the combine. But, of course, he's prepping for it to really show off the big arm inside as opposed to what we saw Jared Goff go through being outside.
I don't think it's going to be – I really don't think it's going to be a huge deal. Ultimately, I don't think that's going to make have a whole lot to do with his pro day valuation. I think it might have more to do than maybe some other people solely because of the division that he's coming from and all of that, and people are going to get to see him and touch him and be around him and kind of see where he's at. But I don't think it's going to be a massive importance, if that makes sense.
Got it.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be hugely important.
Sorry, I'm just I'm a little starstruck watching myself play in the Super Bowl on television while we do radio.
I bet. It's got to be fantastic. Good for you. I'm excited. I'm starstruck on your behalf. I'm very excited about it.
I'm just kidding. I'm hanging on every word that you speak.
I'm sure you are. All right, let's hear some more from Sashi Brown. Do you plan on visiting with all the quarterbacks coming out again before the draft?
Yeah, it's possible. So absolutely. We want to do as much as we can to get a chance to know these guys, spend time with them. It's not limited just to quarterbacks. So we'll anybody we have real interest in. And the other thing is, when you have questions, the opportunity to bring them in on the 30 visit or to have a private visit is a great opportunity to touch those guys again. You know, they're big investments for us. Each one is important, and we need to hit. So the more information we have, the better.
And I think that's where Carson Wentz's pro day is going to be important information. Now, team's got a lot of information on him at the Senior Bowl, so that's why I don't think it's as important. But again, it's another opportunity to go out there and see a guy that maybe you haven't seen as much as you would with a big-time college player.
I agree. And you know what's going to be exciting for us, Nathan, is, you know, and I'm not saying it's going to happen in the hours of noon to 3:30, but the easiest and the path of least resistance into this building, the stairs are directly outside the dog bowl. So there's going to be bodies, you know, walking in and out, you know, some of which we're going to recognize throughout this draft process. They're going to walk the halls of Berea to give you and I an inclination to who's really of interest, because you are limited on the number of people you can actually bring in here.
You certainly are. That's right. Sashi was asked about what they're going to do. Will they explore every opportunity to improve the quarterback position?
We know we in Cleveland, and all the fans know, certainly the Dog Pound understands how important that position is and how much of a struggle it's been for our organization to address the position and find continuity and consistency in terms of play and even personnel at the position. So we are going to, you know, explore discussions to potentially add there. Doesn't mean that we may not end up heading into the season with Josh and Connor and Austin. But we are going to explore the opportunities that are available to us.
All right. That was Sashi there. And then any updates on the possibility of signing RG3?
We've had some internal discussions. I'm not going to go too much further into what those discussions are, what the next step would be in that process, if any.
Any updates on the Colin Kaepernick rumors?
I think that issue was probably overreported, and I know this is the time of the season, and he's a starting quarterback, so there's a lot of interest in it, but not going to comment on it other than to say that it was overreported. We don't anticipate much more dialogue there, if any.
Updates on the Joe Hayden situation.
Yeah, I can't say exactly what happened. I know Joe was doing some working out and conditioning work, and you know, looks like he's injured his ankle in a fashion that's going to require some surgery and extensive rehab. We'll support him and stick by him and make sure that we get him ready for when it really matters. Joe's obviously a veteran. He'll be here with his teammates in the offseason and, you know, hopefully be ready for start of training camp.
And finally, will Joe Thomas be your starting left tackle on opening day?
You know, Joe, our expectation is Joe is going to be there, and our plan is for Joe to be there starting at left tackle for us this year and beyond. And, you know, he's a great left tackle. They are rare to find. He's a Hall of Famer and All-Pro. And so, you know, we don't have plans to trade Joe.
Sometimes plans change.
that you're right. I mean, no one can ever say never say never, but our plans just aren't to trade Joe. We're not actively involved in any discussions with anybody along those lines. I know a lot of those things have been reported, but again, this is the season for a lot of misreporting.
Season for a lot of misreporting. We'll talk about that a little bit when we come back, because I think there's an interesting dynamic going on here. Sashi pretty much came out and said some of the things that Mike Silver were saying were not correct. And Mike Silver's kind of taken a pretty harsh line on Twitter back at Sashi, saying that basically on anything relating to Browns, you better check with Sasha because I don't want to be accused of over-reporting. And he also said that maybe they have a different definition of over-reporting at Harvard, which I thought was a little aggressive. What did you think of that, Wilhelm? Especially because I think Mike Silver, I don't know if he's doing it on purpose, but seems to be going out of his way to create some tension when you know that he's quote-unquote Hugh Jackson's guy.
Yeah, I honestly haven't followed it because, you know, I'm not actively on Twitter. And so, to me, it doesn't win me a football game. And I don't want to be one of those teams that wins the offseason because of comments or transactions. I want to be the one that, you know, what I'm excited about personally, having, you know, spent some time with some of the training staff that's out here, is these guys are going to get physically. They're going to play physical. That's the one thing I'm excited about.
Yeah, go after it and get after it.
No more talking. Push
no more
around.
The time for talk is over.
Win your one-on-one battle. And if you do that, if enough of 11 guys do that, good things happen.
Very good things happen, certainly. Hopefully, many good things will happen that will result in wins for the Cleveland Browns. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. 230, Nate Ulrich from the owners' meetings in Boca Raton, Florida. Coming up here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zager, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs in here for you on this Tuesday. The owners' meetings, the Haslam's making some interesting comments down there. We'll have Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal with us when we come back, but Gibbs, you're a media man, media savvy. What do you think of kind of the back and forth between, you know, this was overreported, that wasn't overreported, people getting kind of maybe taking some offense to it, et cetera?
I like the fact that pull no punches. Answer the questions. You know, you can't get in trouble if you answer the questions. You can't pin yourself in a corner if you just go ahead and answer the question. And it's refreshing to hear someone in the front office of this football team, you know, not shying away from anything.
No, they certainly have not in that regard. You are absolutely right about that.
And, yeah, I like it too. I really do. And I think that the more out there that this new regime can get, the better feel that the dog pound and the fan base gets and can get on board with why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, instead of thinking like, oh, we're, you know, we know we've got our process and we're going to work our process. And it's like, yep, okay, just give us an inkling of what that process is, or make a move or make a comment, or in you know, LeBron's world, a cryptic comment that lets us, you know, at least start to understand the direction, so that's something that we can get behind and stay behind for many years.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you're getting an idea about that. And I think one thing we'll talk to Nate Ulrich about is key takeaways, but it seemed like anybody who was down there talking with the Haslam's is that this is a group that certainly is preaching at this time patience, that they believe, they know that things have not gone the way that they were supposed to for this team, for this organization, and that one of the main reasons was a lack of patience. And they know that at this point, patience is more than a virtue. It's a necessity if this team wants to get where they want to be.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to. And Rome wasn't built in a day, and you know, and they should have that, you know, mantra and mindset. And I believe in incremental growth. There were basic principles of winning football that we did not do last year that I think this fan base can see out of this football team, which might not add up to a win, but will allow you as a fan base to get behind of where we're going, if that makes sense.
Right.
If we're 15th in the league in rushing, and if we're 17th or 13th in our ability to stop the run, I'm optimistic of where we're going. Because then I know we have, with the roster as it sits right now, and these coaches overseeing this roster and that as an accomplishment, I like where we're going. And that in time, as you put the playmakers in position, as you accumulate playmakers, and then you accentuate their abilities to put them in positions to make plays, that's when you start to compete. That's when you go into Pittsburgh confident that you can win a football game. That's when the Ravens come to town and you know they're not going to pull out a victory regardless of under any circumstances what's going to happen here in our building. Those are the things that I want to see out of this football team.
Yeah, and certainly we all hope that that time is imminent for this football team. 216-578-0850. As I said, Nate Ulrich down at the owners' meetings. He will be with us shortly. One of the people that certainly, you know, is generating a lot of, I would say, discussion is Joe Thomas. And I think the Browns were very clear. And it kind of goes back to what I said. I think the Browns want to have Joe Thomas here. I think they will have Joe Thomas here. I was saying, I don't believe that the best time for the Browns to trade Joe Thomas is likely to be before the draft. I do think that the Browns, when the time is right, will trade Joe Thomas. And I think that they will do so, and it will be a good decision for the Browns, and it will be a good decision for Joe Thomas. But to me, that seems to be the middle of the season when a team knows that it is going, you know, playoff bound, likely to go to the Super Bowl, and feels that Joe Thomas, at this point in his career, is the guy that is going to put them over the top.
And do you think it's a struggling young player or an injury for that playoff contender that makes the play for Joe Thomas to solidify that offensive line? Or it's just someone that – and the reason why I say that, it's just like you don't look at Joe Thomas in the middle of the season and go, got to have him to make me plays and go compete. But if it's Kansas City, you know, and you got to have Joe Thomas to block Von Miller or DeMarcus Ware, that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be a team that feels like it needs to upgrade. Carolina, for example, could be a team that gets down there and they feel they need to upgrade their pass protection. They could be a kind of team that makes a move there. So it's Seattle, I think, is a very likely team. They're not shy about being aggressive. I think that that's the kind of team that certainly could ultimately end up, you know, making this type of a move. So I think that for the Browns and for Joe Thomas, the best time is during the middle of the season, because if it happens in the middle of the season, this team's going to be more desperate. They feel that they're in their Super Bowl window, so they're going to be willing to part. They're not going to be thinking as hard about that first-round pick at that point, number one. Number two, for Joe Thomas, you're going to a team that wasn't one of those, oh, they were supposed to be a, you know, a Super Bowl team, but it turns out that they're not going to be. You know what I mean? Which happens. This is going to be one of those things where it turns out to be, hey, actually, okay, they are. That's what you're looking for.
Got it.
So there it is.
There it is.
And that's what I really truly think is going to happen. That's why I think it is going to happen. If it does, that's where it's going to be. It's going to happen in the middle of the season.
And I think the reason why, and maybe I'm expounding on your conversation, midway through the season, it'll allow Hugh, Sashi, Andrew Berry, Paul D. Podesta to evaluate what they've put together in 2016 and go, okay, where are our largest holes and where can we accumulate the most talent when you know what could be at stake in exchange for Joe Thomas?
Right, and it gives you an opportunity to draft a lineman in the middle rounds and give him an opportunity to practice and work and get ready to take over, you know, later on. Because I think that what the Browns don't want to do, if you let Joe Thomas go, you're saying pretty much starting a rookie left tackle, which I don't think you want to do. If you do make an investment in Jared Goff or Carson Wentz, that's not what you want to do to them right at the beginning of their career. So I think it makes sense on all levels that right now there is no plan to trade Joe Thomas, because the value is going to be better in the middle of the season. It's going to be a better situation for Joe Thomas in the middle of the season, and it's going to be a better situation, most importantly, for the Cleveland Browns in the middle of the season.
I agree.
So there it is. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal, who's down there at the owners' meetings. He spoke with the Haslams today and, of course, head coach Hugh Jackson today. So we're going to hear what he has to say about all the goings-on for the Browns down there when we return.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm with you here. And, of course, we're going to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal, who's been down in Boca Raton at the NFL owners' meetings. Nate, I know you got an opportunity to catch up with all of the Browns' top brass over the last couple of days. Today, the Haslams. What was the key takeaway from your time spent with Jimmy and D. Haslam?
Well, Jimmy and D. Haslam, they went over a bunch of topics. I think one thing that was really interesting is, you know, the Browns have this vacancy at president. You know, that title's available with the departure of Alex Shiner. So, and naturally, a lot of us have wondered if Jimmy would try to convince Peyton Manning to come aboard now that he's retired as a player. So, you know, he was asked about that and really kind of shot it down for now and said that, you know, he hasn't even talked to Peyton Manning since before the Super Bowl when he wished him good luck, and that he's really happy with the organization that he has in place. So right now that doesn't really sound like it's in the cards. But, you know, he did throw in that his good friend Peyton Manning will be great at whatever he does, you know, and he said that before. Some of the other things real quick, you know, both Jimmy and D. Haslam said they got out in front of themselves a little bit, maybe a little ahead of themselves when it came to the talk of moving training camp to Columbus. That doesn't sound as sure as it did at one point. And, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. And obviously, you know, Jimmy Haslam talked up his new regime and said he didn't think, you know, they got off to a rough start despite losing those four starters in free agency and really taking a lot of criticism.
And that's really where my, you know, my next question was for you is the overall feel and confidence that Hugh and Sashi, as well as Jimmy and D, have in the decisions that have been made by this organization to create an overhaul process and to believe that they have the right individuals in charge.
I think so. I mean, listen, I don't think anybody's happy that all four of those guys left.
Seems as though we've lost Nate Ulrich down there. Hopefully we will get him back. Interesting nugget there. Not surprised on the Peyton Manning front at all. You don't put this regime in place and then kind of bring in a Peyton Manning at this point.
No,
and
you don't.
I think that, you know, that part makes sense to me. The interesting part of what he just said to me was about Columbus and that the team may have gotten ahead of themselves there. And I know that Alec was certainly very instrumental in kind of bringing that deal together. And it makes you wonder if, you know, without his kind of leadership on that one, if that's one of those things that might go a little bit by, not by the wayside per se, but if that's something that might not be as high up on the priorities as it once was for the Cleveland Browns here going forward.
Sure.
And you know, I think that could be a good thing. Keeping everything here in Berea for the Browns, I think, could certainly end up being a very, very good thing going forward.
No doubt. Well, they're upgrading this facility here. So the, you know, the investment's been put here both by the Haslams and I believe by the city of Berea to do so, to keep the Cleveland Browns here in Berea. So therefore, you don't want to move. And I think what probably rubbed a lot of people the wrong way and what Nate might have been alluding to was some of the reports of the tax dollars and who was going to fund that project back down there in Columbus.
Yeah, and Nate, we were just talking about the Columbus move. What do you think kind of maybe is the change there in the overall philosophy about that?
Well, you know, I think that it's interesting because Alex Shiner had a lot to do with that, I think. But, you know, Jimmy said that he doesn't think the departure of Alex is going to affect it one way or another.
Okay.
But I believe he was the point man on that. So, I do think there might be something to that, you know, when you look at it from the big picture standpoint. But, you know, they are putting a lot of money into the Berea facility, and they're still saying that it might happen, but it might not, and it's not like a slam dunk. And I think most of us thought it was a slam dunk at one point. You know, and Dee was asked if, you know, them building, if it really hinges on them building a facility, and she said she didn't think so because there are other alternatives. And she really spoke about how important it is for the coach to get the players together in the right atmosphere for bonding and things like that in training camp. So I do think that they want to move training camp at some point somewhere, but it doesn't sound like it's really, you know, imminent, and it sounds like it's moving more toward the back burner than I think any of us thought.
Interesting. You talked about, obviously, the new regime and Peyton Manning, and they're happy with the regime here. What was your sense of, you know, because everybody's big concern is, well, they've never given time to anything. What's your sense on that?
Well, that's a new challenge for Jimmy. I mean, really, because, I mean, look at his track record, and he can't deny it, and he'll admit it. You know, he's fired coaches and general managers left and right since he bought the team not very long ago. So, you know, he's going to have to really, you know, change in that way if he really wants to give this a fair shake, because, you know, these guys, Sashi Brown, Paul D. Podesta, they're going to be trying something different in the NFL. Of course, analytics have been around forever, but we all know that they're really pushing the envelope on, and they want to do that. So, you know, that's going to take some time, and really, you know, they're rebooting, as Coach Hugh Jackson likes to say. I mean, and he said today, you know, when it comes to losing those four starters, sometimes you have to take a step or two backward to take a, to gain ground, to take more steps forward. So, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. And Jimmy said today that he's going to be patient. He said it before, but, you know, he's really going to be tested on it this time. I mean, you know, he got his coach that he wanted in Hugh Jackson, and I think that he really has to let it, you know, run its course before making any kind of decision on when to change if it doesn't work as soon as he would like.
And Nate, would you believe that, you know, the lack of moves and some of the minor moves in DeMario Davis and Raheem Moore, you know, being added to this roster, really just holds true to the fact that this new regime is going to, you know, not going to, you know, make any splash, but really put a lot of time and effort into making a splash at the end of April when the NFL draft comes around?
Yeah, I think you're right on there. You know, they want to build through the draft, and they want to, you know, retain their own players that they draft. And obviously that didn't happen at the start of free agency because, you know, they let those four guys away. But, you know, like I said, I don't know. I think I was cut off earlier on, you know, something was wrong with my phone. But, you know, they want to be able to do that. And, you know, Sashi Brown was lamenting the fact that, you know, those four guys weren't re-signed earlier. And he said, moving forward, that's what we're going to do. We're going to lock up guys so it doesn't get to March, and then all of a sudden we can't get them back, because once it gets to that time on the NFL calendar, it's very difficult to retain guys. So, yeah, they definitely want to do that. And Paul D. Podesta, to your point, Matt, said yesterday that, you know, the first day of free agency was the toughest for us because you're losing all those guys and it can get emotional. And you could say, well, if we go a little bit further here, you know, or push a little bit more, we might be able to get this guy. But that's really a slippery slope because it would be strained from their philosophy and from their plan. And a lot of fans find it hard to stomach, but these guys are committed to the plan.
What is your sense now that you were down there and you got to see them as they talked about a lot of these things? What's your sense on RG3, and what would your recommendation be on RG3?
Well, I'll tell you what. We had breakfast with Hugh Jackson again today, and he praised RG3. He said he was thoroughly impressed with the meeting he had with RG3 over the weekend during his visit to Berea. You know, he said that, you know, RG3 answered some really tough questions from him with honesty and with truth. He said he didn't baby RG3 at all. You know, we know that RG3 has a label, not being a great teammate, you know, clashing with coaches, basically being a problem in the locker room. And he said he basically drilled RG3 on that, and RG3 took responsibility and admitted he made some mistakes. And I think Hugh's convinced that RG3 has grown from that. And so I really think that Hugh Jackson is very interested in having RG3 on his roster, and really at times spoke today as if RG3 is already on the roster. So we know it hasn't happened yet, but I think that the interest is genuine, and it's a real possibility. And Nathan, you'll like this. Hugh Jackson really talked up your boy Jared Goff today.
Good.
That's where I was going next, Nate, because I was listening to a really big show with Tony Grossi, who was probably either, you know, right next to you or right across the table from you, spending that time with Hugh Jackson as well. And he said a heavy portion of his hour was spent on RG3 and that possibility, but also Jared Goff, the hand size, the pro day, the wet football, and all those things. So give us some insight on what actually came out of Hugh's mouth about Jared Goff.
Well, you know what, the thing that stood out to me, last month Hugh Jackson did an appearance at the Cleveland Auto Show, and he was asked, what's the first thing you look for when you're evaluating a quarterback? What do you want to see right off the bat? And he said he looks at how the guy handles pressure, and he looks at the guy's back foot. He wants to see that quarterback dig that back foot in the dirt and make a tough throw when he's got guys coming at him ready to tear his head off. And today, unsolicited, he was talking about Jared Goff and just breaking him down. And he said, I love the way he handles pressure. I love his poise under duress. And he has a good back foot that he digs in there and he's willing to, you know, make a tough throw and he's not scared of contact. He goes, you know, some guys have a soft back foot and I don't think you can play in the league like that. So that's what really kind of jumped out at me. Also, you know, he said he spent a lot of private time with Jared Goff and his family. He's really gotten to know him. And he said that he really, you know, he thinks that the Browns did surprise Goff when Pep Hamilton was squirting that water on the ball after the scripted workout. He said, because, you know, hey, we're not just going to go into a pro day trying to do the normal things with the prospect. We want to do some things that, you know, are going to throw him off a little bit because he does the normal things great. And he did the abnormal things great, too. So I think he was really impressed with how he handled that curveball that the Browns threw.
Was that something that the Browns had planned on doing the whole time? Did you get any more kind of elaboration on that? Because, you know, from our standpoint, watching it live, we're like, oh, my goodness, you know, the Browns are basically just saying, hey, we want to see more from you, Jared Goff, and we're going to come out and let the whole world know it and kind of take over this workout and turn it into, for a few seconds anyway, a Browns workout. And clearly that kind of is what happened.
Yeah, Hugh didn't specify, but I don't think that was improvised. And I did ask him about that, and I also asked him about, you know, hey, is this something you're going to do in the private workouts with all the quarterbacks? And he said, no, not really. He goes, it just depends on, you know, where the guy played and what environment he played in. And so obviously, you know, Jared Goff playing at Cal, and we know the hand size has been scrutinized throughout the pre-draft process. I think the Browns really thought it was important for him to show that he could throw a wet ball. So, you know, that's what they were going with. And to his credit, he did well on the fly there.
Yes, he certainly did, and I thought that was one of the more interesting things I've ever seen at a quarterback pro day, and it was good to see there. What did he say? You talked about RG3. You talked about, of course, Jared Goff. Did he give any real insight into, you know, Carson Wentz? And I thought I picked up him saying that he might not be at the Paxton Lynch pro day, which I thought was interesting.
He said that Carson Wentz has all the characteristics you're looking for. He certainly has the stature. The small school thing doesn't bother him, and he will be at the pro day Thursday at the Fargo Dome. But he doesn't really know enough about Carson Wentz yet. I feel like he has a much better read on Jared Goff at this point than he does Carson Wentz. I got the sense that he hasn't had the opportunity to spend as much time with Carson Wentz at this point. And as far as Paxton Lynch, he said he will spend a lot of private time with him as well. He'll make sure to do that, but he might not go to the pro day, and his explanation for that I thought was pretty reasonable. The Browns are going to be having their guys come in, right, for the start of the off-season conditioning program on April 4th, and I don't know the exact date. I haven't been able to look up the exact date of Memphis's pro day. Maybe you guys know, but he basically said that he thought that might be kind of a scheduling conflict with the guys.
Yeah, it's very
back.
Close. Uh-huh. Absolutely. When talking about, you know, he mentioned that he had spent time with Jared Goff's family. Was there any elaboration on that at all?
No, he said he wasn't going to tell us where or when or anything like that. But
okay.
just that he really got to know him and really likes the total package there. And you know, the funny thing is, this is the time of year where you guys know there's so many smoke screens, or you got to kind of, you know, listen, but you know, you got to keep that in mind. But if just talking to Hugh Jackson for an hour today, I mean, if you believe what you hear, and again, you shouldn't, but you would think that the Browns are going to have RG3 versus Jared Goff quarterback competition in training camp. And I think that would excite a lot of people if that actually came true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Certainly will be interesting, to say the very, very least, about it for the Cleveland Browns going forward. Nate, anything else that really stood out to you in your time down there that you maybe wanted to highlight for us here?
You know what? There's just so much information. It's like information overload. So, I mean, a million thoughts are running through my head. I'll hit one real quick, though. You know, this was mostly discussion yesterday, and it was about Josh Gordon. I just got the sense that, you know, the team's brass just, you know, they're prepared for a negative outcome. Not saying that's what's going to happen, but if he's not reinstated, they're like mentally bracing for it right now.
Okay.
And you know, again, it could happen either way. I'm not sure. Nobody knows. It's a very secretive thing. There's a lot of privacy involved in the NFL substance abuse policy. But if Josh Gordon's not reinstated, they're definitely coming up with, you know, plans on how to move on without him. And I thought that was a little bit different message than when we got it
at the combine. It did seem like a different message from the combine there. Did we lose you, Nate? All right, well, certainly good stuff. We do have to take our final break here, and we will be back with our final thoughts. And if you get Nate back, we can get a final thought from him as well when we wrap it up here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Zagura and Wilhelm Gibbs wrapping it up here. By the way, Rand Getlin reporting that TCU wide receiver Josh Doctson, who is my number one wish list at pick 32 to pair with Jared Goff, has workouts and or visits scheduled with the Vikings, Browns, and Bengals. By the way, you will not see a mock draft other than a few that have him going, because there are some mock drafts that have Doctson going in the top 10. But other than those, you won't see a mock draft where he gets to the middle of the first round that doesn't have him going to the Vikings, Bengals, or the Browns. So no surprise there. I think that's one where the expectation has matched up with the hype, and no surprise there as far as the visits for Josh Doctson, who is probably my favorite receiver in this draft other than Megaquan.
Is he the guy that Gibson's like 6 foot tall?
Yes, erroneously.
Erroneously, yes. Okay. And he's what, all of 6'2 plus?
6'2", 215, guy high points the ball, very good, great ball skills, good route runner, has a surprising speed. I like him. I think he's a guy who would be a very, very good fit, and a guy who could be what I would call maybe not a – maybe he could become a number one. I mean, at the same time, I thought Allen Robinson was more of a 1A, and he's proven to be a number one, but I don't think he's quite the athlete Allen Robinson was, but he's a guy who could be, I think, a very good 1A, number two type receiver in this league.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's something you need here, and if you're going to go quarterback at number two, or even if RG3 is going to get a shot to lead the Cleveland Browns, RG3 wants weapons. You know, he had, what, Chris Cooley at tight end early in his career. He had Pierre Garçon. Didn't they acquire DeSean Jackson with RG3 there at quarterback? Or was that after his fall from grace?
That would have been after.
Okay. So, I mean, and again, regardless of who it is, playmaker, touchdown maker is what we need to acquire. Because I think, I mean, this is a scoring league. And I think Ray Horton will get our defense back on track. But is it going to be done overnight and go from 32nd to top 10? I don't necessarily believe so.
No, I don't think so. I don't believe so either. I think you're absolutely right about that. So big news. Sounds like you can pump the brakes a little bit on the move to Columbus for the Browns. That's something that seems to be slowing down at this point, per Jimmy Haslam down there at the owners' meetings, and the team certainly seems to be interested in both quarterbacks, RG3 and, of course, Jared Goff. We know that. We'll see what happens if it's just smoke, but sometimes where there's smoke, there is fire. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of CBD, and as always, stay tuned for the Golden Boys. We do want to thank Nate Ulrich for being with us here today, and also a big thanks to Andrew Hawkins. Again, you can look up his article at Monday Morning Quarterback. .si.com. That's mmqb.si.com. Follow him on Twitter at Hawk as he pursues sports management degree from Columbia. For Jason Gibbs and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.